I guess it's just us.
Well, we're not going to hold the work session first. We'll hold the public hearing on the other piece. Are we ready? Okay. The House Committee on Revenue will come to order. We've had a glitch in our processes concerning Senate Bill 306, so we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 308, House Bill 309, House Joint Resolution 18, House Joint Resolution 19. That public hearing is open. Representative Smith. He was here.
I saw him.
Do we have other people on this?
Yes, we have.
Mr. Chair, Bailey is going to be late as testifying.
Yeah. Well, other people aren't here either. I don't know where they are. So that's the reason. One of the reasons we're not opening the work session. So, who do we have?
For all four bills.
Oh, great. Let's see where there are some common themes.
Common threads.
Well, I'm looking at the list. I assume that Representative Smith will be back. Haven't seen him in the last couple of minutes. He was here at 8 o'clock. So let's go ahead. And I see there are some people who are signed up on all four of these bills. So let's start with them. Ralph Groner, Arthur Towers, and I guess those are the two who are signed up on all four bills, if they're here. Laurie Wimmer, yes. Okay. So we're missing Mr. Groner, so how about Jody Weiser? This committee generally begins at 8 o'clock, so people who are planning to testify on matters coming before the committee should plan to be here at 8 o'clock. Please.
Okay. Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness, Oregon. So each of today's measures calls attention to the fact that in Oregon, 53 cents of every dollar that the state could be collecting is spent via the tax code and tax expenditures of one kind or another. Obviously, you can't have an honest discussion about the budget without a conversation about that half of the budget. We must start addressing tax code spending in the same way we do program spending, as called for in House Joint Resolution 19. In a state where the governor can cut budgets by 8, 9, 12, whatever is needed percent across the board, all by himself, or the legislature can approve budgets with a simple majority, it makes no sense that the other half of the budget, tax expenditures, requires a supermajority. We urge you to move forward with HJR 19. Some tax expenditures are dictated by law. We can't tax federal land or federal pensions, for example, but a good deal of our tax code spending is because of decisions made by the Oregon legislature. This session, we've been astounded at the huge number of new tax credits proposed and being heard in Salem. And most of the goals of these bills could be better achieved via program spending. But for years, avoiding ways and means has been the path of least resistance. It's time for tax code spending to face the same kinds of constraints as budget spending. We look forward to seeing effective review and priority setting by the Tax Credit Committee. It's hard to say we should jump on the bandwagon and sunset everything, as is suggested in House Bill 2008, without seeing the session's effort as a success story. But House Bill 2008 is an idea we embrace. There is more to be addressed in the tax expenditures so ably called to our attention by House Bill 2067 in 2009. The mortgage and senior deductions quickly come to mind. Similarly, without proof that the legislature can really examine tax expenditure and fix it or turn it out, it's equally hard to agree that H.J.R. 18, which says that on January 1, 2013, Oregon will reduce our tax code spending to 13 cents on the dollar, or else, we're not so sure that looks like a good idea until we know how to do this process. But we're hopeful that this year's Tax Credit Committee, acting within a cuts budget from Ways and Means and effectively becoming a committee of Ways and Means, we hope it works. Just as our budget is capped by anticipated revenue in good years and bad, so should our tax expenditures be capped in good years, not just in bad. New ideas, expansions, or unanticipated jump in expenditures would then be issues facing PAYGO, and the Tax Expenditure Committee would become a vital part of our state's budget management system.
Thank you. And I think we're going to interrupt the panel for a moment and let Representative Smith come forward and present his material. These are his bills, and we'll let him introduce the whole set. And Representative Smith, we're open on all four.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the Oregon House. I want to open with some general thoughts and then turn it over to some of the people who have prepared testimony and then potentially be around for questions afterwards. My view is that the current situation in tax subsidies is the single biggest structural deficit in our system of revenue and budgeting. I believe that's a relatively high bar. We have various significant challenges in our system of revenue and budgeting, and I think nothing is a bigger challenge. I think it's bigger than the rainy day fund. I think it's bigger than a two-pronged tax challenge. It is a big deal. The big fact, what militates at least some of this, is that we are now, using air quotes, spending more on tax subsidies than we are on education, healthcare, and public safety combined. Not many Oregonians yet know this. My belief is that the more and more Oregonians who learn this will be as shocked as the ones who hear it now, and that they will be the piper and they will be required to be paid. What this is not. This is not an attack on any one tax subsidy. Many I like. This is not an attack on all tax breaks or the tool. Indeed, part of the reason that motivates this is they are a valuable tool. It is also not an attack on recipients. The Betsy fight that we engaged in the last full session legislature and individual tax break fights are often set up, are often buoyed, often necessitate vilifying the recipients, the windmills that would have been built anyway, the projects that got subdivided that should have been merely one project. This is a structural problem. Why should we care? First, I urge the people who care about services who truly lament the cuts that we're making this session and past sessions and potentially in future sessions. But second, and why I hope that this is the kind of thing that we can embrace in a 30-30 House, is that people who care about tax subsidies as tools should care as well. Because it's getting harder and harder to do them. I believe that the Betsy was offered significant financial benefit for us making moves in the clean economy. But if that weren't already an idea, and somebody were to offer it today, anybody in the legislature who said, oh, sure, let's embrace a huge new tax subsidy, would I think be approaching intellectual dishonesty, if at least questionability. We have a hard time enacting, tinkering, giving haircuts to, amplifications to our system of tax subsidies because we have accreted them and allowed them to ratchet up for so long. How do we get into this mess? I think there are several elements to this structural problem. The reason there are several bills, there is very little drafting ego in any of them. But I do think it will take more than one fix to fix this structural challenge. How do we get into it? Well, first I'll give my impression of the last 100 years of American political history. It will not take me 100 years.
We're very pleased to hear that.
Yeah. But for the next 3 hours, let me explain. That one sort of very quick snapshot view of the last 100 years of political history is we spent the first 60 years of the last century building social programs, primarily by raising taxes, particularly marginal tax rates on higher income people as well as middle class people, then shifting that a bit to lowering tax rates on higher income people, increasing payroll taxes, the rise of the movement that questioned our systems of taxing and spending. And we ran into a wall in that ability to use that set of tools primarily as our way of doing government's business. For the last 30 or 40 years, we have played a very similar game, but this time with the accretion of tax subsidies, where they had used to be a relatively small, modest, occasional tool, where now they have become the pig eating the python. They have become the exception that is dominating the rule. A few other elements in how we got into this, what I call mess. One, diffuse costs and concentrated benefit. For some good government type, somebody wants to go back to their district and say, I don't want to cut schools. I don't even want to cut health care. I'm for the things the government does. I think we ought to do them more efficiently. But we can't just keep raising taxes on people. Right? We got to be careful with this stuff. There's no particular tax credit that or tax break or tax subsidy that gets you particularly upset that you will focus your energies upon. But if you were benefited by one, it is your duty, job, and justified expectation to leverage every ounce of relationship and power you have to preserve it. So it gets pretty hard. We spent a significant amount of, this committee spent a significant, and for those new members of the committee, you're welcome for not having to be a portion of that debate when we were dealing with business energy tax credit in the last session. An enormous conversation, enormous expenditures of energy to save a little bit of money. I posit that a one-by-one analysis of these things or a one-by-one political fight over each one of these things is a fool's errand or something close to it. Second, a ratcheting problem. It takes 31 votes to add one, 36 votes to get rid of one. Right? So they can ratchet up and have. Third, an analysis challenge. If somebody were to say, Jeff, would you like to double spending on education? My answer would be, heck yes, I would love to. Biggest thing driving the education gap is our lack of summer programs for people who need them. We should have after-school stuff. We should have free college for everybody. I could double spending with education and not feel I was wasting more than a few dimes. So, Jeff, do you think we should have universal health care in Oregon? I say, heck yes. Do you realize the business benefit it would be in Oregon for every business to save 15% on its employer costs, employee costs? But we're not allowed to do that, right? We have to weigh certain spending priorities with other spending priorities. I'm not allowed to say I want to double spending for education. I can say it at a town hall, people not paying attention. You know, it's sort of an easy fake promise. But we're not allowed to do that. You got to compare this to that. Unless you're a tax break. If you're a tax break, Jeff, do you like windmills? Love them. Don't know if I want them in the Steens Mountains on top of buildings. Sorry, birds, I'm down. Right? Jeff, do you like movies? Yes, I love movies. I was an Oregonian film freak. Right, I watched 400 movies while I was in law school and still did quite well. So great, business energy tax credit, film and video tax credit. It is an easy game to play. You can go straight to the floor, and only recently have we even started informally in any consistent way considering that as part of the overall budget. This is a thing that I very strongly believe will continue to be the biggest growing part of our budget until we do something about it. So what do we do? To some degree, I think any accurate level of humility would say, I'm not sure the committee should think about it. But let me offer some things that I think should be seriously considered. And let me also say that none of what I am going to say do I think is sufficient. Of the 4 or 5 ideas I think that are out there, I think it's going to take at least 3 or maybe 2. But I think 2 would just make us feel better. First, a thing that I think is worth doing is additional steps in transparency. There's a bill the co-chair of this committee has that I think takes an additional step to doing that. And I posited it's not enough. We right now have the book. I should have brought the book as a prop. Somebody has it, I'm sure, back here. The book of tax expenditures right now is bigger than the budget. And if you went around and said, hey, everybody in the state, take a look at the budget. Some of my, you know, conservative friends could make some hay with how big the state budget is just as a book. But if you went and compared them and had a little ruler and put a little marble, the marble would roll towards the budget. Tax expenditure list is bigger. So transparency is good. It's not enough. A second possible tool. Give us a budgetary cap. Say we're not going to spend any more than blank on tax expenditures. Right now, you know, cocktail napkin math is about 53 cents every dollar. What if we made it 50 cents? What if we made it 45 cents? What if we made it 40 cents? And just said we're still going to do them, but we are going to put a lid on them, and we are going to budget them like we do. We are going to make decisions. We're going to make choices, not just false binary choices. Jeff, do you want universal health care? But honest, disciplined, thoughtful, intentional choices. I would posit that's not enough either. Right now we have a constitutional requirement that we fully fund education, and we don't. Because who's going to make us? We're the legislature, right? Nobody's going to arrest us. So it's not enough. Be a huge step. Third, sunset and review. This might be the thing that had, because we're experimenting with it now on tax credits, this might now be a thing that is as the vector of durability and impact, that's where the vectors might meet. To actually have a more disciplined review of these things so it isn't merely the beneficiaries who are providing the primary information on whether or not they're useful. And I think doing that outside the context of the legislative session, not excluding legislative session, but in an interim review process, would be very valuable. And scoring them and creating a system for scoring them and coming back and being able to have additional tools for evaluation and getting some really smart people to develop that system for scoring. Another option is included within the governor's allotment authority. If we're going to be cutting a bunch of programs without particular consideration, maybe these should be among the kinds of things that can be considered as well. But let me close by saying thank you to the committee for considering these things, and please, it is an easy thing not to talk about. It is an easy thing not to do anything about. My own prediction is it will not be an easy thing for long. That the more and more families who see what's happening to their tax bill, the more and more families who see what's happening to their school days, the more and more employees who see what's happening to their jobs, the more people are going to start looking at this, and are. And my hope is that this committee and our legislature in this session can show some leadership, and I'm very grateful to start the conversation.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for Representative Smith? We very much appreciate your presentation this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Now, I neglected the normal order of things earlier in my interest in getting underway at 10 after 8. But I'd like to go back, while the panel that we started with comes back up, I'd like to go back and have Paul tell us what these four measures do. You will hear, when he describes them, you'll hear echoes of what Representative Smith was saying.
Okay.
Please.
All right, Mr. Chair, what I did was just put a one-page table together for you that just summarized these measures. There's four of them. Two of them are statutory, and two of them are constitutional amendments. House Bill 3008 sunsets all Oregon income tax credits, subtractions, and exemptions. It excludes tax expenditure resulting from federal law or the Oregon Constitution, or those that are designed to avoid double taxation, and that's the state tax credit for taxes paid to other states. And then it establishes a tax expenditure review commission that would be, and it has the how that's to be set up, appointed by the legislature and an appointment by the governor. 3009, House Bill 3009 requires a proportional decrease in tax expenditures when the governor orders a general fund allotment reductions. And as you recall, we've gone through this in the last interim, allotment reductions totaling about $950 million. So what this would require would be an equal proportional decrease in tax expenditures when that situation arises. HGR 18 is a constitutional amendment. What it does is limit the amount of personal and corporate income tax expenditures to 33% of estimated general fund revenue, and that would be general fund revenue absent any tax expenditures. So it requires a temporary tax rate increase when that ratio exceeds 33%, and it does explicitly exclude any tax expenditures, which is about half of them, that would be associated with connection to the federal tax code. So it's a more narrow base. HGR 19 is another amendment. What it does is includes the statutory definition of tax expenditures and excludes those change modifications in those tax expenditures from the definition of bills for raising revenue, another part of the Constitution, and therefore a modification to a tax expenditure that would lead to additional revenue would not be subject to the three-fifths vote requirement.
Okay. Thank you. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing both the Oregon Education Association and the chair. I'm the chair of the Oregon Revenue Coalition, which is a group of over 100 individuals and organizations who have followed revenue for a decade in this building. And I think I must have done something terrible in a previous life, and my punishment is to follow Representative Smith and his wonderful testimony before you today. Not being an entertainer, I will be kind of straightforward. We are here in support of all four of the bills that have just been described for you. I'd like especially to focus in on two. One is one that I thought I was the creator of the idea for, although I've discovered that there are a lot of great minds that run on the same track, and we all believe that we're the parents of this bill. It turns out that only bad ideas are orphans. And that would be House Bill 3009, the idea of spreading allotment cuts across all program areas, not just those that result in services, but those programs that are tax expenditure programs as well. Having lived through the last several allotment cuts from several governors on behalf of the members of the Oregon Education Association, watched one of our most vital services experience hideous declines and cutbacks and the impacts that that has on our students, we believe that something had to be done, even if it were a modest proposal, and we believe this is a modest proposal, just to treat all program areas that the state has legislative power over in the same way. I gave you, with my testimony on the back side of it, the chart that shows all of the general fund program services that experienced that nearly $1 billion in cuts. And that gives you just an idea of the most recent experience with allotment cuts in a period of economic decline in the state. And given that education, among other services, is an economic stimulus tool and a driver of recovery, we, in effect, shoot ourselves in the foot twice, not only by cutting back severely on those services, but on missing the opportunity to provide that economic stimulus that an educational investment has in terms of helping Oregon climb out of its economic hole. So just imagine a world in which we actually were able to recalculate the size of the allotment cut so that just half as much would come out of programs, because in effect roughly half, slightly more than half, would be taken from tax expenditures as well. No one would be canceled. No one recipient of tax breaks would actually lose the break altogether. They would simply have it trimmed in the same way that all other services are trimmed in those truly desperate times. So we thought that this was a modest proposal that didn't disadvantage anyone, that put skin in the game equally for all partners in the enterprise that we call state service. We also provided for your reading enjoyment in what you laughingly call your free time. A copy of A Primer on Tax Breaks in Oregon that I co-authored with Tim Nesbitt back in 2003 when the Revenue Coalition was just a child. And we took a methodical look at all of the different breaks that were then on the books. So it's a bit dated now because we've added something like 20 or so since then. And it takes a look at the issue of tax breaks from the perspective of what are the key priorities of the state, what is it that we want to provide an incentive for, and is this the best tool we have to enact that incentive or to provide that outcome. Sometimes a direct service is the better way to do it, the most economically efficient way, and sometimes a tax expenditure might be the better way to do it. One of the ideas that comes to mind is the earned income tax credit, apparently the most efficient way to provide some income relief for the working poor is through the EITC, whereas direct program is often the other method of giving a direct subsidy. In other cases, it may not be the case. It may be that some of our tax breaks designed to create jobs, for example, actually cost more than the amount of the salary of the job that it's creating. So that's not what anyone would consider, from my perspective, to be an economically efficient tool for job creation. Those are just some illustrations. This report goes into the whole theory about what our values are as a society and how best to take a look in a methodical way at the tax expenditures. And as you consider sunsetting all of them rather than just the Oregon credits, when you consider whether or not we want to enable the legislatures in the future to consider tax breaks the same way they consider policy bills elsewhere in this building with a simple majority rule kind of vote, whether you want to take a look at capping the overall total so that we don't tend to use this as a favorite tool for some sort of advantage, or whether we want to create some sort of allotment process. These would be, primer is a good way for you to get a sense of what the Oregon Revenue Coalition believes is a sensible way to view tax policy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
So first let me give you my written testimony.
And Art, if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Absolutely. My name is Arthur Towers. I'm the political director for SEIU, Local 503. I appreciate very much the chance to testify today in favor of the four pieces of legislation before the committee. What I wanted to do, though, was talk in a little bit broader context about events going on throughout the Capitol this session, because I think that that's an important context for you to be considering these bills. Clearly, the state has got to do business in a different fashion than it does today. You know, Oregonians are victimized by the economic downturn, and they're demanding services in record numbers. We're at about 1 out of 5 on food stamps, 1 out of 6 on the Oregon Health Plan, over 600,000 Oregonians. There's record enrollment in our colleges and universities, and middle-class families are in need of various types of public assistance for the very first time. Our the receptionist for one of the DHS offices was in the Capitol this week, and her story was that she's seeing construction workers, realtors, lawyers, people who never in their wildest imaginations would be coming in for emergency food assistance, health care, those sorts of things, coming into the Capitol. Obviously, we have a massive shortfall in revenue to meet those needs. And we're still facing hyperinflation in health care costs. Since health care is a disproportionately large portion of what the state purchases, our budget continues to get further and further out of whack. So a lot of things are changing as we speak. Our members continue to be engaged in concessionary bargaining. We've sacrificed before with cuts in layoffs, furlough days, higher copays on our health care, all at a time when workload is going through the roof and our members are intending to sacrifice again. The governor is pushing hard on health care reform, and I think that what he's proposing is going to have a big impact on improving the health of Oregonians and long-term cost savings. It should drive in some short-term cost savings, but I'm not confident how big those savings will be. So what's going on is that the other piece I want to mention is that frontline state workers are engaging in a review of the delivery of services to vulnerable Oregonians. Okay. And we've come up with several ideas about how to do more with less. That includes examining the ratio of managerial staff to frontline staff. It includes reviewing multi-million-dollar state contracts with the same rigorous standards that the contract for $22,000 a year clerical workers are being studied. We want to, thanks to members of this committee, we're working to improve the operations of the Department of Revenue in order to close the collection gap. We're improving the procurement practices for state government. And I raise those things because as the state changes the way it does business, I think it's imperative for this committee to consider that we change the way that we do business on tax expenditures as well. The legislation before you today makes important structural changes, as Representative Smith and Lori have mentioned, that are positive in combination with House Bill 2825, the transparency bill, and House Bill 3010, which would require a ways and means referral of tax expenditure legislation. These are good structural changes and important long-term and medium-term steps to take. But I think that we also need to examine taking short-term steps to help balance the budget, because among the toughest cuts to prevent are going to be a $400 million cut to long-term care for seniors, affecting 30,000 people, a 47% cut to the youth authority, which really impacts gang members and at-risk youth, really impacting a lot of our communities. Doctors and hospitals are facing a 16 to 19% cut, and in-home care providers are looking at a 33% cut in take-home pay. The other thing that's kind of the open secret, I think, is that the governor's budget is built on several ambitious ideas to achieve savings that might not be politically possible. So the potential exists we might have to make even further cuts in the budget. So tax expenditures need to be examined in the short term, just as these other state expenditures are being examined. So should we consider an across-the-board cut on tax expenditures? Should we you can look at my testimony and see the numbers. The 5% across the board cut would result in $169 million in additional revenue, which, when matched with federal funds, would preserve the senior programs, you know, as one example. And again, cut in corporate expenditures over $2 million would result in $17.5 million in savings. So again, there's opportunities out there to be thoughtful about how to share the sacrifice across many fronts. I do recognize that a lot of the tax expenditures are designed with the goal of creating jobs. That's really critical. That's what's going to improve our economy and really solve the state's budget crisis, the job creation. But right now we're looking at cuts that forfeit federal funds. And so losing $155 million in for every $1 million that we lose in senior programs and general fund, we sacrifice $1.67 million in federal funds. Eco Northwest did a study in January 2009 that demonstrates that for every $1 million in general fund that we fail to invest in that sort of matching program, it costs us 55 jobs that would be paid for or generated by the federal funds. So again, that's kind of the bar that I would hope that the committee would look at as you consider tax expenditures. And I'll conclude my remarks right there and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony.
Thanks.
I'm looking at my list. Ralph Groner, Marcia Kelly, and Jim Craven next? If you would like. And this panel is not picked for any particular reason except that their names are on the list.
We think the world of him. He reps Intel.
Ralph, would you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And I'd just like to say that these issues are, we support all of them. But just for your own edification, our union represents, as I assume SEIU does, all five areas of the general fund. We represent natural resources in that I have DEQ, DLC, and a number, all the environmental kinds of things that they deal with. Other funds, other programs, OLCC. Education, yes, ASME's very limited, but we do have MESD, Multnomah Education Service District, and we have Head Start. I assume that can be considered part of education. Human services, widespread, not as much as SEIU, but we do have the majority of the senior caseworkers in Oregon, as well as county mental health and other mental health programs. And we also represent, as you may know, Mary Botkin's World of Public Safety, which is rather widespread. I think the reset commission for the governor and the Oregonian, and I want to be nice, really missed and didn't do enough homework, so I'm going to mention how I feel they missed the shot. The fact is, the reason these bills are important, and I want to thank you for beginning this last session with a review of sunset on expenditures. That's been wonderful. I've been called in front of committees to testify on a number of our expenditures. But I would like to say that we have grown more dependent, number one, not only in Salem on my budgets, on fees, but at the local level. I'm a grandpa who we don't want to charge you, the taxpayer, so I raised my daughter and granddaughter. That's all I'm going to say. They're everywhere in this audience doing the same. I take my granddaughter to the school. She's a dancer, and that cost me thousands of dollars, and I can afford that. But I have to look at the people who are less fortunate, and I say these kinds of fees are ridiculous. At the Capitol, I face fees, as in my state police, on guns, which may well go down, but without that, I don't have the background, folks, to look up whether you are a sexual pervert going to work. I'm sorry I use that word, but I talk that way. I'm from Oregon City, Molalla, Estacada area. The fact of the matter is, I'm not from Portland, and I'm not from Beaverton, and we're not... His area may talk more like I do. Thank you. I want to say that the fees in this building...
My apologies to Representative Vance.
Thank you. No, I'm complimenting you, believe me. Fees we've grown more dependent on, but they're voted down regularly. And yet we have to come to you for fees to even keep our programs going. And then the question is, can jobs, and then what kind of jobs, keep up with the cost of ballot measure 5 and 50? I'll only say I went to Paul, and I was shocked. I only asked the question, what is the 40% increase, not the 30% we paid when I was a young legislator, and you knew this, I didn't. And he said, Ralph, that cost has gone up 18% this biennium just for measure 5 and 50. You didn't pass them. The public did. That's $4 billion. And I went, my God, that's the amount we ended up with a deficit entering last session. So then I came back to Paul and I said, well, how are we going to keep up with the cost of those two ballot measures even if we create jobs, which I'm still tinkering with? And basically he said, we can if we come out of the recession with well-paying jobs. My problem is we love Intel and his folks because they pay more than any other corporation into the state, but they're also very volatile. When the economy's down worldwide and they're not selling whatever their products are, then goes our schools in Oregon. There goes our universities, etc. So, I don't think we can afford what the Reset Commission left out. Folks have said, you know, Ralph, we need your members, public employees, to pick up the difference. I can only tell you this. I asked the question. I shouldn't have, but I did. Even if we charged my members on PERS, the full six cost, and then we 5% on health coverage. Quite frankly, what you're looking at is an increase in your general fund budget at the most of $600-700 million. That's not peanuts. What you're facing with 50 and 5 increases every biennium, and my assessors can't keep up any longer on new property coming on the rolls on 50 because they're further and further and further behind. All of this is one big program to me. And so the fact of the matter is, I believe the only answer left is a similar, and I'll close with this, to my own budget at home. I recently had to go through with my family and say, we can't do this, we can't do this. And by the way, they were hard choices, but I did it. I'm older than a lot of folks here, and I finally have learned I've got to be tough on my family, and I did. The fact is, even if we don't like looking at these tax expenditures, I think the public should have a right to discuss this, HJR 18 and 19. I'm not picking on corporate. I'm not picking on personal. I think that we no longer, in my opinion, will keep up because of the ballot measures the public passed with the cost to this state. We simply aren't going to create the kind of industrial jobs. As a matter of fact, in Oregon City, I just lost my mill. We no longer are going to be able to keep up. And the only thing that I can see turning to is a very realistic discussion. Can we any longer afford the tax expenditures, even if it costs me more, you more, and all of us individually, if we're going to educate, provide human services, and safety to the public? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Groner. Yes. Go ahead.
Co-Chair Berger, and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women of Oregon, shortened to AUW. We have about 2,000 members in branches around the state and members at large, and we are educated women. Our public policy includes two items that relate directly to the subject today of tax credits and expenditures. We believe in fair and equitable taxation at all levels of government. I would underscore the word equitable, and adequate long-term funding for education, public safety, and human services. And as we give away money in the tax expenditures of the state, we don't have it to spend on the programs that we care about. And so for the last 5 full sessions, I've been a member of the Oregon Revenue Commission, and I've now joined another group looking at tax expenditures, because if we don't do it, who will? Who will? None of these bills are perfect. I think that the bill that I would suggest our organization support wholeheartedly would be HDR 19, to make the modification of tax credits a simple majority. It's not raising a tax with tax credits. It's just not collecting them by a legislative action. When you give the tax credit initially, it's not raising taxes, so why should you have to have a supermajority in order to collect the taxes that would otherwise be on the book? The concerns that we have about equitable are shown in the tax credits, where they show a means test. And it's not just the amount of money that the people who are making over $70,000 receive back in tax credits. It's also the percentage that are able to take those tax credits, because they have enough income in order to do an itemized tax form. When you look at tax credits, and I think that this session is probably better aimed at looking at tax credits that are both personal and corporate taxes, don't forget, down the line, you really need to look at what you've done to property tax exemptions across the state, because, as Ralph said, with the votes in ballot measure 5 and ballot measure 4750, the ability of local governments to provide services has been constrained. And so anything that this body does, while it doesn't directly affect the bottom line on the state budget, it does directly affect the bottom lines on local property taxes. Some of these property taxes have been on the books since 1987. No personal property tax on personal aircraft. Not evaluated in this year's tax expenditure book, so we don't know whether it's actually achieving its purpose. We're one of the few states that doesn't collect a property tax on aviation aircraft. Just an example. So as you're debating, remember that we're looking for fair and equitable treatment of tax credits. I would suggest that a subcommittee of Ways and Means would be able to be done through the legislative leadership rather than having to have a bill passed. It could be a legislative action. And the tax committee, the joint tax committee that you have, could be a subcommittee of Ways and Means with a budget allotment for tax credits to evaluate them after they come from the policy and the revenue committees. That would be a way that you could look at them. And finally, most of you probably enter the building through the downstairs garage, so you drive in. And you don't have the opportunity that Oregonians do who walk in the front door. So I just leave you with this thought when you're thinking about tax credits. A free state is formed and maintained by the voluntary union of the whole people, joined together under the same body of laws for the common welfare and the sharing of benefits justly apportioned. Every day when someone walks through that front door of the Capitol, they can read that on the left side of the Capitol doors. Thank you for your for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Mr. Craven.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing Tech America. Pleased to be up here as the middle of this sandwich. It's a rare opportunity for me. Just a few very brief comments from the, I guess I got deputized by the private sector to say a few words here today. I think the Oregon business community understands that scrutiny of tax expenditures is a growing part of this game. We'd be pretty deaf, dumb, and blind to ignore that fact. And so it is something that we're doing. I think you kicked off a process last session that you are now going to have to wrestle through in a very short period of time, even though it's a short list of tax and just tax credits and Oregon tax credits and business economic development tax credits. I think that's still going to be a somewhat daunting task, particularly the first time you go down through the drill, particularly because you've got them filtered out through all these policy committees, and then they're going to come back, and you're going to try to rectify all that. We will participate in that to the best of our ability, and you will do your best to land that plane before sine die. I appreciate that the tone of the conversation today and the bills themselves submitted by Representative Smith do not focus on just the private sector or business credits, and I do appreciate that, and I do notice that. Because at the end of the day, if you take that big Oregon tax expenditure book, I'm more familiar with the income tax part than the property tax. If you take the income tax expenditures in that massive book, 95% of those flow to your individual constituents. And that's what you need to wrestle with. Some of the tone of this debate in the past has been, well, it's just the business stuff. We could just do the business stuff, we'd accomplish it. There is money there, but there isn't the money there that there is clearly in the tax considerations that you extend to your individual voters. So passage of HB 3008, for instance, that I like to call the total recall, basically says wipe them all off the books. You're going to have some splaining to do back home, I think, if you were to actually enact that bill, because that takes away most of the value of that, takes it away from individual Oregon taxpayers. I think HJR 19 is probably the one bill that's implementable implementable out of the four. We may differ, but I know the co-chair Barnhart, this is a topic of his. This is the three-fifths requirement to limit a tax expenditure. We probably agree that the interpretation is correct, though I think honorable people can differ on that. That is a bill that is... though it's a constitutional amendment, it represents its own challenges, but it is an issue that could work. I think the other three are quite awe-inspiring in their scope and would be quite difficult to actually implement in a real-time basis. So I think that... at the end of the day, some of us are participating with Co-Chair Barnhart in his transparency bill. It's actually got up for a work session tomorrow, so that's moving forward. And I don't think you don't see that being trying to be thwarted by the business community. I don't think any of us are afraid of transparency, particularly. There ought to be some public airing of how this works and what are the metrics and what are the outcomes. And we think, in by and large, that these programs can stand the light of day and probably deserve it and are not opposed to that measure. At the end of the day, I think we all realize that we can't just circle the drain in a zero-sum game, which is kind of what we get into on this debate sometimes. And it was good to hear Mr. Towers talk about the necessity of jobs and growing the pie. At the end of the day, if we don't grow the pie, we are going to be stuck in this zero-sum game of robbing Peter to pay Paul, and I don't think that serves the state well. I don't think anybody thinks that either, so I'm not saying that people believe that. We've got to find a way to have a more robust economy, so even if there were tax expenditures, there'd be a larger pie to help address public services in Oregon. So thank you for your
time. Thank you very much. Questions for the diverse opinions here, questions for this? For this panel. Thank you. I would simply note first, Mr. Craven, that I very much appreciate the support of the members of the work group on the bill that you mentioned in the other committee, the transparency bill. I think that's going to be an important piece or at least trend as we move toward more awareness in the public of what it is that state and local governments do with the public's money. And I think that this is one small piece of a much bigger movement that may actually change the way people are able to understand what the government does and participate in the discussion. So I appreciate that support very much. Let me also simply add that the discussion that we're having, which includes these bills, of course, the larger discussion is what is the role, if any, of the state government and local governments in the process of building that pie. How do we avoid the circling the drain issue? And instead, what are the best approaches for us to use? Some of us think, I think that's a fair summary, that the best approach is to reduce the impact of government on certain portions of the state enterprise, of the private enterprise. I think others of us believe that the best approach is to build state services in a way that benefit the public and private enterprise while things are developing. And I think most of us believe in a combination of those things. That's what the political process is about, of course, and I think most of the bills that we are considering that surround all of these issues get into that discussion, get into that piece of it. And I really appreciate your contribution and the contribution of the others toward this debate. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I would like to see some data on how our state compares to our surrounding three states when it comes to these expenditures. Because, of course, to do away with some of these larger ones would put us at even a greater disadvantage when we're trying to attract folks. So I'd sure like to see that. I'm sure the data is, there's boatloads of data on these issues. I'd sure like to see
that. That's a great question for staff.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we will send that question to staff rather than trying to deal with it today so that we can stay on track. Other questions with the panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
For your testimony today. I have four more people signed up, and so I'm going to just take them in the order they signed up. Larry Scruggs, Rick Bennett, John Mullen, and then the last one I have is Mr. Cluding, who will have in the last panel. If there's anyone else who would like to testify this morning, please let Carol know so that we can add you to the list.
Co-chairs, co-vice chairs, members of the committee, my name is Larry Scruggs. To establish my credentials on this issue, I come to you today as a former vice president and chief operating officer of a company with a multi-million dollar expense budget, former director of auxiliary services at university with multiple income and expense budgets over $1 million, and a former project manager for multi-million dollar projects around the state. And I also have a PhD in urban studies from Portland State. Today, I wish to talk about our budgeting process in the state of Oregon, and specifically to address the issue of tax expenditures as a part of that budget process. As we look at the overall budget of the state of Oregon, we need to look at revenues and expenses, and one area which is not included in the budget are tax expenditures, which comprise the estimated revenue losses attributable to various exclusions, exemptions, deductions, non-refundable and refundable or marketable credits, deferrals, and preferential rates in the tax code. To not look at tax expenditures with the same seriousness as program budgets in the overall state budget is similar to looking at expenses such as educational payroll at a university, but not looking at the cost of utilities or building maintenance. Such conduct ensures that we do not have a complete overview of the cost of government or control of our spending priorities. At the University of Portland, we had to look at all sources of revenue and all expenses before we could set our tuition rates and manage our cash flow throughout the year. Unfunded student aid had to be included in the budget to manage the cost, and once we reached our limit, we couldn't give away any more without discussing it first or adjusting the budget. At RAS Transportation, we didn't try to run a fleet of vehicles without knowing the full picture of our revenue from all sources and our expenses of all kinds. In-kind contributions were budgeted so we could maintain control of them and we would know what they were costing us. And likewise, when we reached our budget limit, we had to either adjust the budget or not give away anymore. In your business of running the state, you can't do a budget without looking at tax expenditures and what they are costing you. You have to know how much you're giving away, and I would add a cost-benefit analysis of each of the tax credits would be perfectly appropriate. It's not just what you spend, it's also the opportunities that you pass up that will decide if yours is a successful operation or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. I won't belabor the points that have already been made and try to be very brief. Our current economic downturn has certainly had an impact on the state's tax revenues. And it's not surprising that we're having much discussion about the state government tightening its belt and living within its means and so forth. However, I have been rather disappointed that there hasn't been more scrutiny and discussion related to tax expenditures. All of you on this committee know that tax dollars are spent in two ways, both in direct services through the budget and tax expenditures. And AARP policy is very clear that the creation, limitation, the elimination of tax expenditures warrants at least as much scrutiny as, in fact, direct spending decisions. We think the resolutions and bills that are before you today, the intent is to provide similar treatment and scrutiny of tax expenditures, and we support that intent. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen. I'm here today as co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon Tax and Revenue Committee. I apologize for not signing up initially. As co-chairs, we're not immune from coordination issues. We had some last-minute changes to our testimony, which has been distributed to you. I just want to mention a couple of things briefly because there's been some really very good testimony today. First of all, I want to thank Representative Smith for bringing these bills forward. I think this is an important discussion to have. Secondly, I just would mention that Human Services Coalition has been at this discussion for a long time. We have had our principles of fairness, adequacy, stability for many, many years. We were also involved in advocacy around the creation of the first tax expenditure report that was available to people. So this goes back to the 90s, I believe. Recently, we added another principle, which is the principle of transparency, and there's been a fair amount of discussion about that today. And I want to just also say that we appreciate the fact that there's a tax credit committee this session. So I think as we look back historically, the production of the report, greater move towards transparency, the discussion about tax credit, we see progress in this discussion. And I think that it is fair to say, in echoing Mr. Craven's testimony, that it obviously is something that's being considered very, very much by members of this committee, the Senate committee, and also the co-chairs of Ways and Means looking at how to construct a budget. I just would mention that as these final deliberations happen this session, we do indeed hope that tax expenditures will be considered even during this session about a way to get to a balanced budget when we look at all of the issues that were very eloquently mentioned by SEIU, Mr. Towers. His testimony talked about a number of the challenges that we face with the budget, and I won't go over any of those. But finally, I just would close with saying that really appreciate the opportunity to have this kind of discussion. I know that there's the weight that you have on you to figure out how to best deal with the issues that are in front of you, the tax expenditures that are being proposed even this session, a number of other things that reflect on the amount of revenue that we might have, the adequacy of that revenue. And so, again, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Mr. Clute. And I'll make one last call. Is there anyone else who would like to testify this morning on these bills? Mr. Clute, welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Barnhart, Co-Chair Berger, and committee. For the record, Bill Clute, Carpenters Industrial Council. It took us a long time to get here. I know you folks have been tied up in the evenings and haven't been able to catch the late news or the 6 o'clock news. But on national news 2 Fridays ago, they had 10 minutes on what happened to America. They started talking about you can't buy. In 1970, 9 out of 10 products in this country was made in America. Today, 1 out of 10, if you can find it. They showed a big graph. This is national news. 1970, millions of American jobs. As the years went by here, 1980, 1990, and, 2000, she fell off. It's just barely above the graph over here. It's not just Oregon, it's the whole nation. Again, committee, you've got your hands full. For 3 years, all we've heard, Oregon's in for a jobless recovery. Well, that wouldn't be too bad if our revenue and our expenses were kind of even. But there's no way you're going to pay back a $3.5 billion debt with a jobless recovery. When you look through the 2,000 bills that have been introduced, I can't find a jobs bill that isn't. What few there is tied to a tax credit. I admit we need tax credits for creating jobs, but let's back up and look what happened to Oregon. I remember before NAFTA was agreed to by a Democratic president, Congressman DeFazio came to this town and spoke to 300 people, telling us, explained to us why NAFTA was a bad program. Well, it's taken this long, but now we know NAFTA was a bad program. Every trade bill that Congress has passed has hurt this country.
Mr. Kluding, we appreciate the history, but can you bring yourself to the attention of these bills? Thank you.
An example of tax credits. This nation has what they call a liquor tax, black liquor tax. It's not something you drink, but we lost a paper mill in Albany that received over $2 billion from the federal government, Treasury, non-refundable. But yet they still closed that plant after making tremendous profits. Mr. Groner's talked about Blue Heron. Oregon has lost its industrial workforce. Oregon has lost its middle class. I know you folks got a book, a rule book you have to work through, but the state, the way Oregon is today, I don't feel that rule book's going to work. Somehow we got to protect our schools. For sure we have to protect our elderly. They're the ones that's kept us going, got us where we are, not where we are today, but through tough times, they got us to where this state was one time was a very powerful state. And I will say in front of you today, unless we can come up with a good plan, Oregon will be absolutely the last state to climb out of this recession. With our lands tied up with the federal government, we lost 60,000 mill jobs in 2.5 decades, from 400 mills down to 100. We still can't touch our federal lands. We used to be powerful enough to bring Oregon out of any hole. But again, hopefully, committee, you can come up with a plan to start bringing Oregon back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kluding. Other questions, Representative Watt?
No, I don't have a question. It's a comment.
Please.
There's a lot of support to take a look at these tax credits, and I think we have to, and that we need to, and we should. And one of the concepts that I don't want us to lose is that, in no small measure, these tax credits are a down payment, or they're a cost of the decisions that we have made on a policy basis. As we have decided to enact the world-renowned land use policies, there's a cost to that in our economy. There's a cost to that for the job creators. And as we go down each one of these tax credits, I believe we'll be able to identify what regulation that the state or the people enacted that tax credit was intended to alleviate the cost of. So, with respect, as we're going through the tax credits, this isn't, in my mind, as I'm sitting on the committee, this isn't an instance of who's evading the tax code and getting a great benefit. In my mind, part of the analysis is, what is the burden on the regulations that we want in order to create the livability in the state that we say we want? What is the economic cost of that? And to what extent does this tax credit keep us competitive in lieu of that?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Kluding.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3008, 3009, House Joint Resolution 18 and 19. And colleagues, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 306A. We have people ready to testify on that. Would you come forward? And Paul, would you tell us where we are on this measure? We've already heard this one once, but we have some additional testimony in connection with the Dash A4.
Actually, Mr. Chair, this is the first hearing Senate Bill 306.
Oh, thank you. We've talked about it enough, so I'd lost track of that.
And this bill, of course, did come to you from the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. You do have an amendment, an A4 amendment, and this grew out of the discussions with the Senate committee and was requested really on their behalf. So that's where that amendment came from. It doesn't change the substance of the bill. The only thing we don't have at this point is all the paperwork on this amendment, which we're hoping to get shortly.
Thank you. And Hasina Squires, I think, also signed up for to testify today. There she is. Please, go ahead.
Okay. Chair Barnhart, Chair Berger, Jim McCauley, representing Washington County. I have Dan Olson with me on my left to help answer some of the technical questions that you may have associated with Senate Bill 306, as well as the dash 4 amendments. As Paul mentioned, this does come to you from Senate Finance as well as the Senate floor. It passed with an 18-12 vote. The 12 dissenting votes, the only comments that were made on the floor were process-related and concern of sending a bill physically over to the House side without it being completely fixed. The reason I think you may have heard so much about this has been my life for the last month to try to get this bill through the process by the 15th of next week. So this is a conforming bill, bringing consistency within ORS 198 in reference to double majority vote that the voters repealed back in 2008. We had thought that we'd fix this in 2010, missed a section, came back at this point in time with an additional section for conforming, and Hasina Squires with SBAO pointed out that there was still yet another element within 198 that needed to be fixed as well. So that is it in a nutshell. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you.
Chairman, Madam Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
And for the record, would you introduce yourself?
Dan Olson, the Washington County Council.
Thank you. Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair Barnhart and Chair Berger. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents approximately 950 special districts throughout the state. Special districts are formed under ORS 198 statutes, and that is the statute that is being amended here. Special districts are governed by 3 to 5 member bodies. We do have, there is the ability to form a county service district, ORS 451 special district, and that is a district that is governed by the county board of directors, and that's what Washington County has brought this amendment forward. You used to only be able to form a special district in a general election, which a general election is a November election in an even-numbered year. That's the way the statute used to work. In the 2010 legislative session, Senate Bill 1015 was passed, and that piece of legislation was intended to repeal sections of statute that should be eliminated by virtue of the double majority vote being repealed for May and November, double majority requirements being repealed for May and November elections. At the time Senate Bill 1015 was proposed, ORS 198-815 sub 5 was changed and altered to allow for district formations in a May or a November election of any year. That was a policy change. And at the time that that bill was discussed, I know this because we were involved in it, there was not a policy discussion that was held at the time. This is simply cleanup language for May and November elections, double majority requirements. At the time, we had Tigard Aquatics District that was looking to form. And they were successful. They did put a district formation on the ballot, and it was successful, and it was approved. So what this piece of legislation does, without the amendment, without the dash 4 amendment, is allow for a special district to be formed at any election, March, September, May, November of any year, even or odd. The dash 4 amendment would change that to elections in any year of May or November. And that is a policy consideration, we believe, for the legislature. And we want to highlight it to you because we do not want to have someone come back at some point in time and say, how did this happen? We went from one bite at the apple in November of an even-numbered year to eight bites at the apple, and this amendment would make it four bites at the apple. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. Do we have any data on average voter turnout in May and November elections in odd-numbered years versus even-numbered years?
Well, the answer is yes, not on me, but yes, we do.
Okay. If I may follow up.
Please, yeah.
The reason why I'd like to have a look at that is that what I think we have to be very careful. What we're talking about here is creating a special district, which is a permanent local government that creates a permanent tax rate that is paid for by the taxpayers. And I'm a lot more comfortable in November of even number years because my belief without the evidence is that you get the highest voter turnout in general elections. And anytime we add additional opportunities, then we risk creating something with a ever smaller plurality of voters in terms of the general population. So I guess the bill limits the number of times, so I guess it's I'm kind of leaning in favor of the operation here, but just wanted to express that concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, I think I understand the intention here, both of the amendment and of the bill without the amendment, but could you clarify, please, the situation that exists if the bill does not pass at all, what the status quo is and why that's a problem?
Maybe add to that, what's the urgency?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Representative Reed, let me start with the urgency first. There actually were, in some ways, two urgencies. Last year, for example, the Aquatic District issue arose because the Tiger-Tualatin School District was out of money and was prepared to shut down its swimming pools. And once you shut down a swimming pool, it's down. It costs millions to bring it back up again. So the county formed at the request of the citizens in the area, formed a small district to fund exclusively those swimming pools. And in order to do that, we had to get a change to the statute, because when the voters approved the constitutional amendment that opened up the double majority to additional elections to every May and November, the legislature went through and conformed the statutes to that, but this particular provision was missed. So we were able to get that amended, but in doing so, we did not catch the fact that for formation, you're limited to a primary or general election. So here we are. This year, we're looking at a different district. First of all, let me note that had it been this year for the Aquatic District, we would be in the same position, only we would need this legislation to form the Aquatic District this year. So the pools would have gotten shut down without this bill. This bill in particular, however, is designed to allow the county to form a county service district specifically for road construction in the North Bethany area. That's the largest new urban growth boundary area to be brought in. It's planned. It's ready for development. We have developers who are anxious to get started, getting the groundwork laid for new development to come in. If we can't put that on the ballot in May, then they will have to wait an additional year before they can submit their land use applications to get the process started, because we won't have any way to fund the roads. So that's the urgency behind it.
So maybe I'm missing something really obvious. If it's May, November, why would it need to be an additional year? Why not just till November?
Well, that one I can answer.
Okay.
Because the current statute says primary election or general election. The primary election is next May, a year from now. and the general election is next November, a year plus from now.
Okay, general election only, even
and,
years,
and,
yes.
And you. And that's what your point was, if I understand it, about the pool issue, because it just so happened to fall in a year in which there was a primary election and a general election.
Thank you.
That's correct, yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
As relates to the second question, what would this bill do? It would allow for a May or November election in each year for both a formation and a permanent rate limit. If you're going to form a new district, you have to have a permanent rate limit. The Constitution would allow you to go out to with a permanent rate limit election in May or November of every year. The statute does not allow you to do that, and we want to conform, in our view, conform the statute to the new constitutional provision.
It appears that that opinion might not be universally held by the panel. Perhaps we could hear another view.
Co-chairs Barnhardenberger, I'd just like to clarify, districts form often without a permanent tax rate. It occurs. So you can form a special district and not have a permanent tax rate. It's happened most recently in Umatilla County. Umatilla Radio Data Control District attempted to form, had a separate measure on the ballot for a permanent tax rate. That tax rate was not approved. They had a district that's, we have districts that operate without permanent tax rate authority. They eventually get it, or they use your user fees to collect property taxes or to collect taxes to fund their services.
Mr. Chair, one additional question, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. The without asking you to characterize much more beyond what you have already done, could you comment a bit more on the no votes in the Senate? What you mentioned their concern about not having the amendment. Could you elaborate, please?
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, Representative Reed. I watched the floor debate in the Senate, and I believe Senator Cruz brought up the point again. He was the only person making a comment on the floor, and again, it was related to process, bringing a bill forward that still needed to have some additional fixes taken care of on the House side. So the concern was not to bring a bill forward that was not complete in its finality to the floor prior to sending it over to the House side.
A follow-up? Sure.
Please, yeah.
So do you expect that if this A4 amendment was adopted and Senate Bill 306 was to pass through the House, that it would receive greater support in the Senate and on its return for concurrence? And separately, or as part of that question, could you take us through the timing, the days, the exact timing that you need in order to, I mean, are we going to make the finish line here before you?
I think there's potential to make the finish line. If this comes out of committee today, I think the timing is to then get it to the floor. I have my fingers crossed by Monday, but I think it's probably more likely on Tuesday of next week. That will meet, I think, the expectations from the commission. It comes down to managing risk in terms of when they have to announce a May election, and they have that date on May 15th. In reference to the concurrence, we're making these changes partially at the request of the Senate Finance Chair, Chair Burdick, but also at the request of some other members of that committee as well, to take care and make sure there was clarity, to clearly make sure what we were doing was what we wanted to do, and to get rid of some of the clumsy language, or at least eliminate any chance for, you know, eight or essentially unlimited elections and things of that nature, to make sure this was just applying to a May or November, and that was fine. So I'm expecting no problem with concurrence on this. The Senate side has been brought along with what these amendments are. Both Senate Finance Chairs as well as those other committee members know exactly what you have in front of you today and are fine with the language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Brewer.
Thank you. I am very sensitive to Washington County's particular needs on this. Can you explain just something to me in the we're saying that it can be held on the next May or November is what you're hoping. And it says if the election's held in another month, at least 50% of the registered electors eligible to vote in the election must cast a ballot. So it conceivably can be held at any of the other elections during a year, but it requires 50%. Is that
right? Mr. Chair,
Representative Brewer. That language is taken out. So the dash four amendments that are in here eliminate the language that's in line 18 and line 19 on the first page of ANDROS 306, and also make the same change on line 13. Is that right? On page 2 of ANDROST.
Yeah, Representative Berger.
And that is the amendment that is before us that didn't come out of the Senate? Is that my understanding of what happened?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the A4 is to deal with that issue.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I could pursue.
Yeah, please.
So that was the complaint, a legitimate one of the Senate, that critical, rather important piece of this proposed legislation was not before them when they voted.
Correct.
I can understand their discomfort.
Yeah. But now that doesn't change this doesn't contradict the constitutional prohibition. I mean, the general rule in the Constitution, as I understand it, is that you have to get, to establish a property tax, you have to have half of the voters have to vote in the election. The exceptions to that, also in the Constitution, are for May or November elections. Is that right? And so this of course doesn't contradict that at all. It simply clarifies that for the purpose of these particular property tax elections, it can be held in May or November without the 50% majority requirement.
Co-chairs Barnhart and Berger. Actually, with a dash four amendment, you would not be able to form a special district in that March or September election, even if you received 50%. It is a flat-out prohibition, and you get four bites at the apple, any May, any November, odd or even-numbered year.
Now I understand why the Senate was uncomfortable with it. I didn't get that part. This actually prohibits the formation of the district.
With a permanent tax rate.
With a permanent tax rate at elections other than May or November.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That now I understand it, too. Anything else? Yes, Representative Bentz.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was still not very clear on the special district's position on this amendment. Are you in favor of it?
Co-chairs Barnhart and Berger, we support the bill with the dash four amendment.
Okay, thank you.
That's another helpful piece. I'd like to go back just a little bit to understand the urgency for the issue. You're trying to form a road district, and if I understand, and I'm making this up because I'm not certain because you haven't said it, but it sounds to me as though what you're trying to do is establish a road district in a development area so that the roads will be paid for by the properties that benefit from the roads through a property tax levied to pay for the roads. Have I understood that correctly?
Yes, Co-Chair Barnhart, Co-Chair Berger, that's correct. There's about $70 million in road improvements needed, and the county formed a committee with developers and landowners and property owners, and they came up with a package.
Okay.
This is one piece of that. There's also developer fees. There's also some countywide money being put into the roads. But in order for everyone to have the assurance that the roads will be in place for the development, this needs to get approved prior to allowing the developments to start getting approved.
Does any of this include industrial land?
Mr. Co-Chair, no. There is a small commercial area being proposed for this area, but no industrial land.
Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Representative Wan.
Thanks, Mr.
We'll get there eventually.
Sometimes you go round and round a little bit, and you just kind of need to tie it up, and that's the way my mind works sometimes. So,
yeah, mine too.
Absent this bill, under current law, when can I go out on the ballot to create a special district with a permanent tax rate?
Either way. You're the lawyer. If you're wrong, I'll correct you.
Co-Chair Berger, Representative Wan. If this bill does not pass, then you are limited to going out to form a new district with a permanent rate to the primary or general election only. So you only
twice. Sorry, Mr. Co-Chair. So two times every 2 years, because it has to be an even-numbered year. You've got May of the even-numbered year, and you have November of the even-numbered year.
That is correct.
Okay. Follow. And then with this bill, as amended, assuming the amendment comes in, when can you go out to create a special district with a permanent tax rate?
Representative Warren, you could go out in May or November of any year.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to stand at ease for a minute. We're waiting for a report from Paul on whether or not we have the fiscal so that we can open a work session on this bill. So the committee, please, will stand at ease for a moment.
hearing and a work session.
Tomorrow. Okay. Are you ready? The Revenue Committee will come back to order. We have just learned that we will not be receiving the fiscal on this bill today. So we're going to carry over the public hearing and work session to tomorrow, and we'll post accordingly as carryover from today. With that, we'll close the public hearing, and the committee is adjourned.